This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
الحمد لله رب العالمين والسلام على عبد الله ورسوله نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين أما بعد. So inshallah ta'ala we're resuming the classes on the topic of hadith from the book Bulugh al-Maram. And this is the first time that we did the book Bulugh al-Maram in this masjid. But these classes have been continuing on since the time that we were in Dubai. I think we've been doing them for around about 3 years or so. And we started at the very beginning of the book. The very beginning in Kitab al-Tahara, the book of purification. And then later on, we went on to Kitab al-Salah, the book of the prayer, completed it, walillahi alhamd. And after the prayer, in the books of fiqh, comes the zakah. And we had started the book of zakah. We had started it in Dubai, then we moved, I think we started it a little bit more of it. We did, or maybe we started it in Newcastle, and we continued it on, even during the time of the COVID restrictions, we were doing it from home. And alhamdulillah, we have reached up to hadith number 501. Just to recap on the book, because there's some people who came to the masjid maybe for the first time for this class, the book that we're taking is a book called Bulugh al-Maram. And this book is by Imam al-Hafidh ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, rahimahullah ta'ala, and it is a book of hadith. But the books of hadith can be divided into different types. There's ways we can make categories in books of hadith. There are books of ahadith that are musnada, meaning that they have chains all the way to the Prophet ﷺ, like Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim and Sunan Abi Dawood, and you read the long chain. And there are books which are summarized, and the reason they don't have all of the chains in them is because you can see the reference in the book and you can go back to the reference and there you'll find the chain. So for example, the hadith we're going to cover today is reported by Abu Dawood. Al-Hafidh ibn Hajar hasn't mentioned the whole chain and the narrators and everything, but if you wanted to see that, you would just go back to Abu Dawood, open it up, find the hadith, and then from that hadith, you would be able to find the chain and look at the authenticity and so on. So why did Al-Hafidh ibn Hajar summarize it like that? Because he wanted this book to be easy for you to study, easy for you to revise, because this book contains ahadith or ahkam, the ahadith that relate to rulings in Islam. What do we mean by the ahadith that relate to rulings in Islam? The ahadith that relate to things that you have to do, they are wajib upon you. And the other ones that are prohibited for you to do, haram. The things which it is recommended for you to do, mustahab. The things which it is disliked for you to do, makruh. And perhaps, even though it's not maqsooda, it's not deliberately intended, but sometimes you might even find some of the mubahat, the things which are permissible for you to do. They're allowed. They're okay for you to do. I think if you turn that down just a touch, inshallah. The things that are allowed for you to do. That's what this book covers. It covers all of the topics of fiqh that relate to the things you have to do and the things you mustn't do and the things that it's recommended for you to do and the things it's disliked for you to do. So it's going to start with salah, because salah is the first of the actions that are required from you after the shahadatain, after testifying that there is no God worthy of worship but Allah. You're required to pray your salah, right? And before you pray, you have to be pure. So it starts with tahara, and then salah, purification, and then prayer. And then what comes next in the actions of Islam, the outward actions you have to do, the next one is zakah. And that's where we reach now. And this book, like the other books of fiqh, is divided into ibadat and mu'amalat. So it's divided into things where the intention behind them is your worship between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's a pure act of worship. And the actions where the original intention is a benefit in the dunya, but you do it in the way that Allah commanded you, like marriage and trade and so on. And we call these the mu'amalat. You originally do these mu'amalat because originally before Islam, these mu'amalat existed for the sake of something in the dunya, like people got married since the time of Adam alayhi salam. But Allah Azza wa Jal commanded us to get married in a certain way and so on. And so it falls from that category, it falls into an act of worship. So this book is divided into these two. And we're still into the section that deals with ibadat, acts of worship. And we're into the topic of zakah. And we covered many of the types of zakah already. But we now came to an important kind of zakah. And this kind of zakah is narrated in a hadith. وَعَنْ سَمُرَةَ بْنِ جُنْدُبْ رضي الله تعالى عنه. This hadith narrated from Samurah ibn Jundub رضي الله عنه. أنه قال كان رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يأمرنا أن نخرج الصدقة من الذي نعده للبيع. رواه أبو داود وإسناده لين. Samurah, he said, that the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wasallam used to command us to take out sadaqah. And here we said the word sadaqah, it means zakah here. Because when you're commanded to give sadaqah, what is the sadaqah you're commanded to give? Zakah, right? There's no other sadaqah that you're commanded, you're obliged to give. Kana ya'muruna, he used to command us, you must give this. And Allah Azza wa Jal calls zakah, sadaqah, in the Quran, إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينَ الْآيَةِ, that the zakah is only for the poor people and the masakeen till the end of the ayah. And Allah Azza wa Jal said, خُذْ مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ صَدَقَةً, take from their wealth a zakah. So the words sadaqah and zakah are used interchangeably, and you understand that it's zakah by the context. Because if it was voluntary sadaqah, it doesn't come under the command of the Prophet ﷺ. So this is zakah. He used to command us to take out the zakah in those things that we prepared for sale. So the topic that we have today on the topic of zakah is the topic of urud at-tijara. Urud at-tijara. I first of all want you to get a tasawwur al-mas'ala, like they say, to have an understanding of what urud al-tijara actually are. So I'm going to use the English word urud al-tijara. We're going to call it trade goods, business goods. The first thing I'm going to tell you about urud al-tijara is that there is no specific kind of goods that we're talking about. It could be cars, it could be pencils, it could be money, and it could be anything else that people buy for the intention of selling. And where we want to distinguish here is, what's the difference between things that you sell and trade goods? This is the first issue we're going to deal with. What's the difference between things that you sell and between trade goods? There's no zakah upon things that you sell in general, but there's zakah upon trade goods. What's the difference? Things that you sell things for many reasons. Sometimes I might sell this iPad because it's an old model and I want to buy a new model and I'm kind of sick of it now and I just want to give it away, I want to sell it to somebody, so I sell it. That doesn't come under trade goods. I might sell my house because I want to move to a new house, a bigger house. Doesn't come under trade goods. It might come under zakah from the point of view of your money, your gold and silver and your pounds and dollars and dirhams, but it doesn't come under trade goods. Trade goods are the things that you buy and the reason you buy them. The reason you buy them is for the purpose of trade. I didn't buy the house to live in. I bought this house because I want the price to increase and I want to sell it. That's the reason that I bought the house. So here we have to distinguish between four different situations. Four different situations that the scholars mention as it relates to distinguishing between these two, between things that you sell and trade goods. This is all for the purpose of tasawwur al-mas'ala, so you understand what we're talking about in the hadith. We haven't even come to the hadith, we're just trying to understand what are trade goods. So the first thing, let's give an example of something that you buy and your intention is not to sell it. That's the first category. So I go to the shop and I buy myself one of these tablets, this iPad here. I buy this iPad. Why did I buy the iPad? I bought it to use it. Might I sell it in the future? Maybe. Maybe I'll sell it when I'm finished. Maybe even my niyyah is to sell it once I'm done with it. But I'm not buying it for the sake of the price to go up or whatever, and for me to make a profit out of it. I'm not buying it for trade. I'm buying it for using it. Selling it comes as a secondary goal later on. Maybe I'll sell it if the price is worth it. Maybe someone will come and offer me, this is only worth 200 and something pounds. Maybe somebody will one day in the masjid outside, we come from the salah and he says, brother, I give you 500 pounds. Why not? But that's not my, I didn't buy it for the reason of selling it. Let me give you the opposite example. I buy a tablet like this. The reason I'm buying it is I found it on eBay for a cheap price. They were selling it on eBay for 200 and I know that in the market I can get 300 for it. So I purchased it for what? For the purpose of selling it. This comes under trade goods and it doesn't matter what it is. And you guys know if you trade on eBay or you buy things from Amazon, all the different things people sell. There's no way you can gather the names all together. Every different kind of thing. People make money buying and selling it. But when you bought it, your intention was to, trade in it. You bought it for the reason of trade. Those two were pure examples. Where it gets to a problem are when the examples become mixed. So someone says, I'm buying a house because it's a good investment. And when I'm buying it, I'm going to live in it until the price goes high. You with me? So he bought the house for 150,000. He says, this house, I'm sure this area is up and coming. Inshallah, it's going to go high. So when the price comes to 200, I'm going to sell it. But until then, I'm going to live in it. Tai, what do we think here? Is zakat due upon it or not? Yes. Because his intention is the trade. The fact that he's living in it is secondary. It's not the main reason. It's not the main reason. He's just living in it for the meantime. But his goal, his niyyah, his aim is to trade, is to make money out of it. His aim is living in it because, well, I'm not going to leave the house empty. I may as well live in it. I may as well rent it for a couple of years while the price is going up. But the intention behind it was trade, was to make money from it, to buy it for the reason of making money. And the smaller intention, the second intention or the small intention was, I'll rent it in the meantime because why should I leave the house empty? It's not making me any money if it's empty, right? So here, the person, it becomes due the zakat upon it. It could be the other way around. The main reason, as we said, could be usage. Someone says, I'm buying a house to live in, and if one day the price goes up, I'll sell it. This is not due zakat upon it. Because the primary intention, the main reason is to live in it. That's my house that I live in. And if one day the price goes high, maybe I'll sell it. But that's not my reason for purchasing the house. Now there comes a fourth issue. What happens if your intention is equal? Now someone might say it's a bit of a difficult one to imagine. But if you imagine that it's exactly equal, I want to sell it, I want to use it in equal amounts. Like my intention is to sell it and to use it. I'm buying it to sell and to use equally. Here, the majority of the scholars, they said that zakah is due upon it. The majority, they said that zakah is due upon it when your intention is even like that. Type, come back to the hadith of Samurah. The Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to command us to take out the zakah from those things that we prepared for sale. So now we've got an idea of what it means to prepare something for sale. But we have a problem with this hadith. The hadith narrated by Abu Dawood, وَفِي إِسْنَادِهِ lean. Its chain has a weakness in it. Hafidh ibn Hajar brought us a weak hadith. Why ever would he bring us a weak hadith? Al-Hafidh ibn Hajar is an imam in hadith, one of the famous imams in hadith. Why ever would he bring us a weak hadith here and tell us it's weak? He didn't bring it and leave it for us. He said, "Wa fi isnadihi lin." It has a weakness in the chain. The reason he did that, rahimahullah ta'ala, is remember, he's writing a book of hadith. He's not writing his own opinion. If it's his own opinion, he can say, I believe, or my opinion, or my madhab, is that there is zakah due upon trade goods. He can't do that because he's writing a book of hadith. He can only bring a hadith. So he brings a hadith, the meaning of the hadith is correct. But the hadith itself, as you look at the chain, has a weakness in it. So we now have to ask ourselves, do we have supporting evidence? Because we can't base our religion on a weak hadith. And what did the scholars of Islam say about urud at-tijara? So we say that the jamaheerul ulama, the majority of the scholars, including all of the four madhahib, the Hanafis and the Shafi'is, or the Hanafis and the Malikis and the Shafi'is and the Hanbalis, all agreed on the obligation of zakah on trade goods. All of the four madhahib. But we still need evidences. So we know that the Hanafis agreed you have to pay zakah on trade goods. The Malikis, they said you have to pay zakah on trade goods. The Shafi'is, they say you have to pay zakah on trade goods. The Hanbalis said you have to pay zakah on trade goods. Like we say, we need the evidence though. What's your evidence? They brought a number of evidences, and I'm just going to mention to you a few. The first is they bought from the Quran in Surah Al-Baqarah. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنْفِقُوا مِنْ طَيِّبَاتِ مَا كَسَبَتُمْ وَمِمَّا أَخْرَجَنَا لَكُمْ مِنَ الْأَرْضِ. All you who believe, spend out of the good things that you have earned. Spend out of the good things that you have earned. Al-Kasb means what you earned in your business. What you know, the money you earned. Mujahid, when he was making the tafsir of this ayah, the great tabi'i, the student of Ibn Abbas, when he made tafsir of the ayah, he said, "Nazalat fit tijara." This ayah was revealed about the zakah due on trade goods. So they gave an ayah from the Quran. The ayah in the Quran doesn't say zakah on trade goods, but the tafsir of the ayah is the ayah was revealed for that reason, and the ayah says, "Spend out of the good things that you have earned and what we brought from you from the earth." The second evidence they put forward is this hadith. The hadith in Sunan Abi Dawud. But we said the correct opinion about this hadith is the hadith is da'if. Did everyone agree the hadith is da'if? No. Ibn Abdul Barr said the hadith is hasan. It's a fair hadith. But the correct opinion is the opinion that Hafidh ibn Hajar brought, and he said this hadith is weak. But they brought it as a supporting evidence. They also brought what is narrated by Ad-Darqutni and Al-Hakim from Abi Dharr, that he said, سَمِعْتُ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ يَقُولُ, and he mentioned in the hadith, he mentioned in this hadith, وَفِي الْبَزِّ صَدَقَةُ or صَدَقَتَهُ. And al-bazzu here, as it was said by Dharqutni and al-Bayhaqi, that it refers to the tijara. It refers to the fahad al-hadith. He said this hadith includes an evidence for the zakah upon urud at-tijara, because the bez which is mentioned here is from the kinds of clothing. And we know there is no zakah due upon clothing, right? Material that the tailor keeps in the shop. There is no zakah due upon it, apart from the fact that it is trade goods, right? So trade goods include materials and finished goods. Trade goods include materials. So the tailor who keeps the material, the builder who keeps bricks, and so on and so forth, the materials you keep, and or maybe the person who is making soap keeps oil, the oil that they keep to make the soap with. All of these come under, and the finished product, all of them come under trade goods. It doesn't matter whether you bought something as a finished product, or you bought the raw materials for the reason of making the finished product. All of those come under trade goods. From the evidences that they brought forward, is the statement of Umar radiallahu an, that he said regarding some of the trade goods, someone who used to sell a particular kind of product, he said, قَوِّمْهُ ثُمَّ أَخْرِجْ صَدَقَتَهُ. He said, calculate its value and then bring out the zakah of it. And they brought a hadith narrated from, or they brought a statement from Ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma, لَيْسَ فِي الْعُرُوضِ زَكَاةٌ إِلَّا مَا كَانَ لِلْتِجَارَةِ. There is no zakah due upon products except what is prepared for trade. So they had, and these are just a handful, but this is something that the four madahib agreed upon, that there is zakah due upon trade goods. And we said, when it comes to trade goods, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about raw materials or half finished or finished. It doesn't even matter about the money that is used for investing in those goods. So even a business that brings in investment, in order to purchase materials with it, this also comes under the same ruling of trade goods. So a business raises £100,000 to purchase the materials or to purchase the goods to sell them. That money that they bring in, that is also included in their trade goods. And the profit that they make when they sell them is also included within that. So here what the scholars say is, they say that it is actually, this is like a division of zakah upon gold and silver. It's the same kind of principle as zakah upon gold and silver. So first of all, what are the conditions of zakah generally we've been talking about since we started the class? We've been saying, an yahula alayhi al-hawl. There has to be an Islamic year passes by. When does the Islamic year start for business goods? Does it start when you buy the goods? Does it start when you make the goods? Does it start when you bring them to the warehouse, when does it start? It starts as soon as you gain the money that is going to be used to purchase those goods. As soon as that money comes into the business, remember in Islam, we didn't really have a distinction between the business and the person at the end of the day. The person, and now we have limited companies, right? It doesn't really matter, the same idea applies. When the money comes into the possession of the business or the sole trader or the person for the purpose of tijara, for the purpose of selling those things, the purpose of buying those things and selling those things. So how could it come in? It could come in through investment. Somebody put money in, the owner put money in, or someone else put money in. They took a halal loan. Someone put money into the business. When that money comes in, that's it. What's that money for? That money is there for growing the business. Okay, now we start it. The person purchases something with it, brings it in. The clock is ticking. They sell it. Still the clock is ticking because that money is still, it's still part of the same process, right? The clock is ticking, whether they sell it or whether they don't sell it. The year goes by. At the end of the year, Islamic year goes by, 12 Islamic months. Then what do? The business owner takes a look at that account and says, okay, this money came in. We bought this with it. Maybe we sold some of it. Maybe we didn't sell some of it. And they calculate the zakat upon it. And the zakat is the same as the zakat upon gold and silver. It is 2.5%. 2.5%. Rub' al-ushur. A quarter of a tenth. Meaning 10%. A quarter of 10%. 2.5%. What about though, if those goods are still in the warehouse or in the shop shelf, in the shelf in the shop? What can he do? He has to take an inventory of the value. Which value? The value he bought it at, or the value he wants to sell it at, or the value they are today? The value they are if he sold them in the market normally at that time. Not the, closing down sale price, you know, just like get rid of it. Like, you know, I'm just going to sell it for £1, but just get rid of it. But the normal price in the market, the price that it's currently selling at today, the value, if he sold it today, normally, doesn't matter if it's a little bit discounted, he can do the discount value, but not like, you know, the closing down sale price, but then, you know, like the ulama, they say, min ghayri iltirarin kathir, without the si'r al-muttar, the one who's desperate and he just, you know, quickly sells it. But the general price calculates at that price. But what about if he doesn't have enough cash to pay 2.5%? He can pay it from the goods itself. If he doesn't have enough cash to pay it, he can actually take the goods himself and give the goods until it reaches 2.5% of the value. What about if there's a mix of cash and products? He counts them all together because they're all part of the same process, right? The money came in to buy those things. You bought them. You made things with them. You sold them. It's all part of the same process. It's all part of the same process, so the zakat is all counted for it together. But there remains one thing, and that is what? The nisab. What is the threshold? Because we know that zakat is not due on, you know, if I just bought, let's say, if I bought like, I bought 5 of these books to sell. I bought 5 of these Bulugh al-Maram books to sell. Is there zakat due upon it? It didn't reach the threshold. It's not expensive enough. So what is expensive enough? Expensive enough is the nisab of al-dhahab wal-fidda. It's either gold or silver. Gold is 85 grams of gold. silver is 595, whichever is lower, that's the one you use. So right now, what do you think 85 grams of gold is worth? Definitely a few thousand, couple thousand pounds. I'm not sure, I didn't check the gold price today, but I'm sure that 85 grams of gold is worth, a few thousand pound, And 595 grams of silver, maybe a few hundred, maybe 300 pound, 350, whichever is lower. Why do we go with the lower one? Why don't we go with the higher one? Because the lower one is more beneficial for the poor, for the poor people. It's better for the poor people. So we look at which one is lower because the purpose, the maqsid of the zakah, the purpose of the zakah is to relieve poverty. So if we tell people, don't worry, you don't have to give zakah until your shop goods are worth 4,000 pounds, he's going to say, okay, there's less zakah. But if you say, as soon as you have even 300 pounds of goods, as soon as you even have 300 pounds, you have to give it. It's better for the poor people. So whichever one is lower. Because in history, the number goes up and down. Sometimes gold value is high, sometimes gold is low. Sometimes silver maybe is high, sometimes silver is low. Right now, silver is low and gold is high, so we use silver. So is it that the case that the businessman gives this zakah once a year, or is it more than once a year? In reality, each amount of money is separate. And each set of goods that they bought is, if it came from a different amount of money, is separate. But a lot of people struggle to keep it all separate. They find it a little bit difficult to keep everything separate. So they lump it all together. They put it all together. He says, look, I just want to do once a year. One time a year, I just want to look. What's my cash in the business account? How many goods are in my shop? What's the value of the things I'm going to sell? That's all I want to do. Is he allowed to do that? He's allowed to do that with one condition. That he has to do it at the earliest time that zakah becomes due. So let's say let's just give an example. He got 20,000 pound investment. And he went and bought some things. So the clock started ticking, right? Later on, a separate thing, he got 10,000 pounds of his own money, he put it in to buy something different. The third time, he got some more money from something else and he put some more money to buy something different. So he needs to calculate the zakah at the earliest one of the three if he wants to bring them all together. If he wants to keep them separate, he can keep them separate. That one when a year finishes, that one when a year finishes, that one when a year finishes. But if he wants to bring them all together, he needs to make sure he brings them together at the earliest time, not at the latest time. Because in that case, he's late on the first zakah, but he's on time for the second one or the third one. No, he has to make the first one on time and the second one early and the third one early. But if he makes it early, isn't it possible he might make a mistake? He might calculate his zakah too high, too low. It's okay as long as if he realizes later he made a mistake, he just can pay more. Or if he paid too much, then it's extra sadaqah for him. It's the same with your personal wealth. For example, if you earn a salary every month, this is not on the topic of urud at-tijara. If you earn a salary every month, when is your zakah due? Your zakah due is due a year from the month that you received that salary. So you receive that salary on the 1st of Ramadan. The zakah is due on the 1st of Ramadan for that month. You got a zakah on the 1st of Shawwal. The zakah is due a year after the 1st of Shawwal. You got zakah on the 1st of Dhul-Qa'dah. It's due on the 1st of Dhul-Qa'dah. Some people say, wallah, it's difficult for me. This salary, every month I'm calculating zakah, I just want to pay it in one go. No problem, pay in one go, but what's the condition? You pay at the earliest time. So you started your job in Ramadan, the earliest time is the next Ramadan. You have to pay at that time or before that time? That time or before. And you can pay for the year, it's okay, you can pay can pay early, it's no problem. Because a lot of times in business and things, it's difficult every month or every week. Maybe some businessmen, they are bringing in money every day, bringing in money for, and spending, bringing, spending, bringing, spend. And it's very hard for them to be calculating the zakah every single transaction they're making. So instead, what helps is just do it once a year, twice a year, once a quarter, whatever is easy for the person, but make sure that nothing is late. You never go longer than, it's never longer than a year. So for example, if you open a business, when is your first zakah due? 12 Islamic months from the day that you started trading. That could be you brought your investment in, some money was put into your business, you put some money in. When you put that money in, then a year, Islamic year from then, you start, you do your accounts. Don't worry about Companies House, don't worry about tax, HMRC. That's different. Islamic zakah, 12 Islamic months, they give you like 12 months plus 4 or something like that. No, Islamically you have 12 Islamic months from the time you brought that money into your business. You have your 12 Islamic months. What about if you're a sole trader, you don't have a business, but you just by yourself, you're buying and selling. The first time you took, you put that money aside for the intention of business, like maybe we earn a salary, but maybe I want to do some business on the side. The first time I took that money, I said, this £1,000, I'm going to buy things with it. Khalas, the timer started. 12 months from then, I do my first Islamic accounts. I look at the money I have. I look at the profit I made. I look at the goods that I have, the stock I have, and I calculate the value. I look at the value of 595 grams of silver, maybe 300 pounds, whatever. Make sure if it's over 300 pounds, what I have, I take it and I give the zakah. There are lots and lots of other issues we need to cover in urud at-tijara because it's quite a big topic. But where sometimes it's important is, just to give you an example, sometimes when the value is very high of what you're buying and you intend to keep it a long time, the zakah can actually eat away a lot from the value. Usually zakah doesn't affect you, right? Because it's a very small amount of money and you don't really notice it. You made 100,000, you give 2.5%. It's very small, and it's not even, you don't even think about it. In 100,000, 2,500, very small amount of money. But sometimes the problem comes when you buy something for sale of very high value and you don't sell it for a very long time. High value, don't sell it for a long time. Like what? Like a house. I'm going to start real estate, buying and selling houses. So a person buys a house. Maybe they're going to wait 5 years. Maybe they're going to wait 10 years before they sell the house. Every Islamic year that goes by, they're paying 2.5% of the value of the house. Let's imagine the house is £200,000. Bought the house. Reason they bought the house, it's going to go up, I'm going to sell it. It's going to go up and I'm going to sell it. But it's going to take time to go up. Maybe it's going to take 5 years. Every Islamic year that goes by, it's paying 2.5%. So 10% is 20,000. A quarter of that is 5,000. Every year, 5,000 paid zakah. Next year, 5,000. Next year, 5,000. Before he sold it, he already paid £25,000 in zakah in the 5 years. What's the solution to this? The solution is don't leave it empty to go up in value. Rent it out or use it for some benefit so that it doesn't just decrease while you're waiting to sell it. Of course, if you didn't buy it to sell, there's no problem. You don't pay zakah anyway. If you bought it to live in, you don't pay zakah. Even if you might sell it later on. But you bought it to sell. It's your second house, you're not living there. You bought it. I bought this to sell it. I'm waiting for the price to go up. But then the market crashes because of something. COVID happens. Market went down. Now I'm stuck. 10 years I'm waiting to sell this apartment. I can't do anything with it. Every year, the zakah is going from it. So in this case, you should try to use it for something in order so that you don't get caught out in that situation, which is the one of the very rare situations where sometimes you can get caught out. So rent it out or do something with it so that you can benefit from it as well. And the money you get from that, you can use to support you while you're waiting for the price to, you're waiting for the price to go up. Someone asked a very good question. They asked, what about if you bought a house to live in or for your children, to give it to your children, like for your children to live in, and you're renting it out? Is zakah due upon it? You bought it to live in for your children or to give to your children. Is zakah due on it? No. Not in this point. You're right, zakah is due in the sense of your own profit from the rent or whatever, that's different. But I'm talking about, is it trade goods? No, it's not trade goods, because you didn't buy it for the sake of trading it. You bought it to give for your children to live in. But what it's due is, obviously you're going to make a profit on the rent, and the profit you make on the rent is your own money. You spend some of it, and whatever is left, you pay your zakah like normal, right? Does that make sense? Yes, if you rent the house, the rent is just like any other income, like salary, like anything. You pay your expenses, you pay your bills, you pay whatever, and whatever is left, if a year goes by and you have that money, you pay zakah like normal. But it's not considered trade goods, right? It's not something that you bought it with the intention of selling it. Sometimes there might be some situations where you have to ask some of the ulama, like maybe you bought it for your children to sell it. You bought it because your children want to sell it. So here, any like you maybe have to ask some conditions. But generally speaking, if you bought it to live in and for your children to live in, then it's not trade goods. Zakah comes from the rent like anything else. You get your income, you pay your family bills, you pay your needs, everything, whatever is left over. If you kept it for 1 year, then zakah is due. It's important also to note about the issue that we call al-mal al-mustafad, money that comes to you during the year. A lot of times in business, the same transaction or the same money keeps bringing you money during the year. For example, it could be like an investment of some kind, and it keeps bringing you money during the year. If that came from, we already mentioned this in the lectures, if it came from the original money, it's not a new transaction, it's not something new, it's coming from the old one, then it's considered part of the old one and you give the zakah all together. You put it all together. But if it's a new transaction, then no, it's not part. It has its own counter, its own timer, its own year. Its year is it by itself. But sometimes you have money that is part of the original one. Like example, someone is selling, he doesn't sell all of his goods in one go, right? He sells one day, he sells 20%, one day he sells another 20%, one day he sells another 10%, 5 months later he sells another 10%. In one day he doesn't sell the whole thing. So all of these are counted on the same timer. They're not counted separately, because they all came from the same source. But salary is not like that, because each salary is separate. Each salary you receive every month is completely separate from the other one. It's not like when you put an investment and you keep getting profit like a dividend from it. Every 3 months you get a dividend from it. That's one amount of money and it's bringing you profit every 3 months. Let's have a look at some of the questions that we had online.
At what age do we have to give zakah? This is a very good question. Zakah is a right which is related to wealth. It's not related to age. They say zakah is haqqul mal, or it is min al-huquq al-maliyah. It's from the rulings that relate to and the rights of the money itself. So it doesn't matter if that money belongs to a very small child. It doesn't matter if that money belongs to someone who is majnoon, insane. It doesn't matter if that money, it doesn't matter who it belongs to and what age they are. But the only difference is who actually gives it. So if it's a child, does the baby calculate their zakah? No. The wali, their guardian, their parent, the one who's looking after them, they calculate the zakah. The child is not sinful if they don't pay the zakah because the child doesn't know. But the zakah is to be paid. There's no age. It's not like salah where you start praying at 7, you start giving zakah at 7, and then you give zakah at 10, and then you have to give it at 15. No, zakah is a right of the wealth itself. So even if the wealth belonged to someone who is insane, their guardian or their helper, the one who's looking after them, they will take the money and they will pay the zakah on their behalf. Okay, savings. Someone asking about savings. What about savings? And sometimes people saving money for their kids until they grow up. So this doesn't come under trade goods, obviously, because it's not money that you're keeping for trade or for business. It comes under regular zakah on money. So regular zakah on money is very simple. Like all zakah, or generally speaking, most zakah, we have a minimum amount threshold, and we have a year, and we have a percentage. Okay? So what's the minimum amount? As we said, it's 595 grams of silver. And this question was related also, do we use silver or gold? You use the threshold which is the least, the smallest one. So here at the moment today, silver. So 595 grams of silver. Let's just say, example, let's just say 300 pounds. As soon as you're saving for your child reaches 300 pounds, start the timer or save the date in your calendar for one Islamic year from that day. Put it in your diary. One, let's just say, first of Ramadan, you reach 300 pounds for your child. You will put in 50 pounds every month for your child. 50, next month, 50, next month, 50, next month, 50. First of Ramadan, it reached 300 pounds. I'm giving 300 as an example. Actually, it's the 595 grams of silver. It could be 295, could be 350, depends on silver. It went over, okay? Now, you write the date, first of Ramadan. Every time the first of Ramadan comes, you pay the zakah on that money. So you put in 50 pounds a month, right? So after a year, you have 500, 600, right? You have 600 pounds. So you pay the zakah. You pay 2.5%. So 60 becomes 15 pounds, right? On 600 pounds becomes 15 pounds. You pay your 15 pounds. Now it became 585 pounds. Again, you put 50 pounds. Now the next year comes and it's 1185 pounds you have. So you pay on that 1185, you pay a quarter of 10%, 2.5%. Then again, you keep saving, and then again, and so on every year. When do you stop the timer and start again? If the money dips below the 300 pound, the money goes below. Maybe you had to spend it because you put it for your kids, but maybe sometimes you lost your job, you had to spend it. Okay, it's gone down. Okay, cancel the timer, start again. Now it's gone over again. Okay, it's gone over 300 pounds. Right, let's start the timer again. Start the timer. Every Islamic year that goes by on that date that it went over, you pay your you pay the zakah for them. So it could be like the day they were born. Maybe on the day they're born, somebody put, you know, £1,000, started saving for them since they were born. Maybe before they were born even, someone starts saving for them. But every year that goes by, they're paying the zakah on the whole amount. It's not like I've paid this, I'm not going to pay again. I pay every time, keep paying. But obviously, the amount is going up and up and up every year because you keep adding. If the amount ever goes below 595 grams of silver, then if it goes below that, khalas, then you stop the timer and start again. It's the same with your salary, it's the same with everything else which is personal. And this way, what we talked about when we talked about the business goods is very similar. But the difference is the business goods is not just gold and silver, but also anything that you purchase for the intention of selling it, growing it, making something with it and selling it. This all comes under urud at-tijara. We're going to stop there inshallah ta'ala, but we still have a lot of issues in business goods still to go. So I think I covered about half, but we still have quite a few things to cover because there's quite a lot of things we have to talk about. We haven't spoken really about business shares in companies. Like, you know, when you buy shares in a company and you get dividends, you sell your shares. We haven't spoken about that either. So we have quite a few issues to talk about. But we have some questions from the brothers who are here.
Is there somebody who did have a business there? And then yes, and the tax money coming, and he's blown away from the government on changing the name of the business for somebody. What about now? There's the guy who's still being paid the zakat of his business.
So here the situation is, I'm going to make your question more general. I'm going to make it very general. Is there any connection between the modern business structure, like whose name is the business in, change the name, close the business, open a new business, all the things that, you know, even tax evasion and all that type of stuff, does this affect your zakah? The answer is no, it doesn't affect your zakah. Your zakah is still due the same because this is between you and Allah. And you can't make a hila with Allah. You can't make a trick with Allah and go around, you know, and say, this is not in my name, it's in my friend's name. Or that's if you do that with HMRC, that's your responsibility and you take the punishment for it, or you take the uquba that they give you. Either they find it or they don't find. But a Muslim should not cheat. The Prophet ﷺ said, "Man ghasha, falaysa minna." Whoever cheats is not one of us. But it doesn't affect your zakah. Your zakah is, your niyyah is between you and Allah. And that's why we said that Islam doesn't really have such a concept as the limited company. It doesn't matter Islamically. What matters is who owns that money. You know, who does that money belong to? So it doesn't harm. The limited company is fine. It doesn't harm anybody. But it doesn't really change the reality of the zakah. Because at the end of the day, the limited company has shareholders, right? Those shareholders, they are the owner of the money, right? If this company, let's say you have a company called Tim's Widgets Limited, and we're selling all different kinds of little things in the shop. At the end of the day, I own half and my son owns half. So the responsibility of that zakah is split between the two, same way. So it doesn't really change if you change the name to somebody else or if you close the business and open a new business. In the sight of Allah, you can't go one way or the other.
Another one, there's somebody who ran away from the tax man because he changed the name, ran away. Say that's not my name. There's no paying tax. It's a haram.
Okay. So tax evasion and tax avoidance. So we're not talking about zakah, okay? We finished zakah. We're talking about Western or let's say secular, non-religious tax, okay? In the UK, we have HMRC. May Allah Azza wa Jal keep you and me safe from them. We have HMRC. and they collect tax on behalf of the British government. Is it allowed for a person to evade or avoid two things, taxes? So there are two issues here. First of all, the Prophet ﷺ said, "Man ghasha falaysa minna." Whoever cheats is not one of us. And he said, "Al-Muslimuna ala shurutihim." Muslims have to agree to their terms and conditions. So when you open a business in this country, you agree to certain conditions, shurut, right? You agree I'm going to pay my tax. You agree to report your income to HMRC. You agree that you're going to, you know, after 18 months, you're going to submit a tax return and this and that's your, you agreed. You made a shurut, you agreed. Well, Muslimuna ala shurutihim, Muslims have to agree to stick to those things they agree to. However, we know that much of that tax in the UK is spent upon haram. Agreed? Some of it. I'm not going to say all of it. Some of it is spent upon things that Islamically are not useful or are not allowed or are haram. So what should the what should be the position of the Muslim? You're not allowed to break the law, but you should do everything you can to minimize your tax bill. And that's the same like every businessman does. Did you ever find a businessman who doesn't want to minimize his tax bill? In the whole world, every single one of them, they want to minimize the bill. But you can't break the law. So you minimize the bill the clever way. There is the clever way, there is the silly way. The clever way is that you know, you have an accountant and you know you have expenses and you know you structure your business with shareholders the way that it should be, and you have, you know, you employ people, and you know at the end of the day you use the law to your advantage to minimize the bill, like everybody does. But you shouldn't get to a stage where you reach tax evasion, where you are breaking your condition that you made with them. They never forced you to open a business. They never came and put a gun to your head and said, you have to open a business today. You agreed to open it. And when you agreed to open it, you agreed to the conditions that they put upon you. And the Prophet ﷺ said, Al-Muslimuna ala shurutihim, Muslims have to stick to their conditions. So in this case, it's not permissible for you to break the law and cheat and lie and steal and whatever, but it is permissible for you to minimize your tax bill in the legal way. Like, and you see, the more, subhanAllah, the more these companies, the bigger they get, the more clever they get to minimize their tax bill. So you see the likes of Google and they're paying like peanuts in tax. You know, some guy's got a fish and chip shop outside, he's paying more tax than these guys. Because they are very clever. They routed their money through this country and that country, and this money went here and that money went there, and then they didn't break the law, they just used the law to make it as small as possible. And ultimately that's what you should try to do. You should see that I want to minimize it. Why do you want to minimize it? Because at the end of the day, most of, or much of that money is going to some things that have no benefit in it. It's not like it's going to Bayt al-Mal in the Muslims, you know, it's going to help the poor Muslim people. You don't try to minimize your zakah. Did anyone say they want to try to minimize zakah? You got to, you know, lower your zakah bill, keep it minimal. You know, put some money here, some money there. We spoke about this. Do you remember we gave an example? Rahman, do you remember the example we gave of someone who tries to minimize their zakah bill? How do they do it? We gave the example with sheep. We gave the example with sheep. Somebody has, let's say, for example, 200 sheep. So what they do is they spread the sheep between different people so that when the zakah collector comes, he says, I don't have these sheep. These are not all my sheep. That's his sheep and his sheep and his sheep. Is that allowed in Islam? No. Why? Because the purpose here, the Prophet ﷺ forbade and yujma, that you gather together that which was separate, and that you separate what was gathered together. In other words, avoidance for the zakah. Because what is the zakah going to? It's going to the poor people, it's going to the needy people, it's going to what's important, it's going to what Allah loves. As for subsidizing, you know, drunk people on the NHS, then at the end of the day, this is not in our interest. But We do what we agreed to do. We agreed to live here, we agreed to open a business here, so we agreed to pay our taxes. But like everybody else, we keep it as low as we can, like everybody does. And some people think that's immoral. Like, so I'm saying outside of the Muslim, some people say it's wrong. You should not try to minimize it. We say that minimizing it is is tabi'i, something normal. Everybody does it. But there are some people who say today you should not. They say that it's morally wrong, and you know, why are you trying to minimize it? Why you should be, you know, thankful? But ultimately, that's not the case. In terms of non-Islamic things, you pay the minimum that you need to pay to stick to your agreements and your rules and your laws and so on. But for Islamic zakah, no, you don't try to minimize it by separating your sheep into groups or by bringing the other person's sheep together so you don't have to pay so much and stuff like that.
There's another way that if somebody is doing, if he says they have a business, he's putting on the name of the son this year, next year he's putting on the daughter name, he's keep going like that every year. On, if the dad left the business for the son, say that, I am out, I'm retired, I'm home. Because that way he's still he's working with the son, keep going with the business, and he will, the son this year, and next year.
So I give you this one, very simple. What he's doing, either it's legal or illegal. So you're talking about changing the name of the business to his children and things like that. Either it's allowed or not allowed. If it's allowed, there's no problem. If it's not allowed, then he can't do it. Yeah, but it's either like some of these things are allowed and some of them are not allowed. For example, I give you an example of one which is, I can't say it's allowed because I'm not a tax advisor, but I just give you an example of one that many people do. Someone has a business, he gives his wife a share of the business. He gives his wife a share, like 30% of the business. Why does he give his wife a share of the business? Because when it comes to the dividend, she has £10,000 tax-free or whatever, and he has £10,000 tax-free, so he pays a little bit less tax. Generally, if it's not illegal, Islamically, it's not a problem. If HMRC say it's illegal, khalas, it's illegal, you can't do it. But if they say it's okay, you give your wife 30%, and then she has a bit more, you pay less tax because you're both getting tax-free allowance together. If it's allowed, it's allowed. But if it's illegal, they come and say, no, you're not allowed. We change the law. Now from today, you're not allowed to do that now. Okay, then if you're not allowed to do it, then as a Muslim, you're not allowed to do it either. Does that make sense? So they have to go to, it's not for us to answer, it's they should go to their accountant and say, when I change the business to my son's name, is it allowed or not?
It's allowed, but he's run away for the tax. No one has paid.
If it's allowed, it's allowed. If it's not allowed, it's not allowed.
It's not haram.
Islamically, it's not haram. Islamically, we don't have a say in it. Islamically, we don't have any opinion about it at all. Because it's not an Islamic law. It's a non-Islamic law, right? So we don't have an opinion. But it only matters, is it allowed? Does his accountant say it's allowed or not? Your accountant say, yeah, it's fine. Accountant say, no, it's not allowed. This is illegal. So the person should not break the conditions they agreed to because of the hadith al-Muslimuna ala shurutihim. Muslims have to agree to the conditions that they make. Okay, let's stop it there, inshallah, so we have time for the adhan, for Isha, and we have time to... Ready? Do we have any more questions on the live stream today? Did I miss any out? Okay, in that case, inshallah ta'ala, we will stop there. And we're going to be continuing the topic of business transactions next week because we didn't finish all the issues. We have a lot of issues to talk about business transactions. Today was just an overview. But did you all understand generally about what we meant about goods for business, about business goods and stock and raw materials? We understood, inshallah. Okay. Next week, we'll go into some more individual issues, and Allah Azza wa Jalla's best. Wa salatu wa salam ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.
Jazakumullah khairan for watching. Please subscribe, share, and you can visit muhammadtim.com.